Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you, as we explore together, as we explore the caves of imagination, as we explore the underwater caves of imagination, and we swim down in there, and we get trapped, and then we perish. And so we go back into a time machine and do the whole thing again, but the same outcome repeats, and we get trapped and perished each time until we come inured to the fear and come to enjoy the dangerous adventure.
What are you doing there?
Oh, I'm getting out all my puppets and fixing them up. All my puppets was my soap for a while.
You got a lot of puppets. They're all different kinds, too.
Yeah, like this is a rod puppet.
It's just a rod with a face drawn on it.
It's conceptual. I have a marionette.
Oh, he's very regal looking.
I can see the strings. I have lots of hand puppets, like this lazy looking doggy. Hello there.
Jesus, it's alive!
No, Butchie, that's just Hardy using the dark arts.
Come on, guys, I know I'm not the greatest puppeteer, but I like puppets a lot. Have I ever told you of the story of the beginning of the puppet?
No, but tell us a story, Uncle Hardy.
Oh, Lord, I'm not your uncle.
You're like a Dutch uncle.
What's that?
A person who gives stern critical advice.
That's the opposite of my Dutch Caribbean uncle, Uncle Martin St. Martin from St. Martin's. He'd let us do anything. He'd be all, do you want a beer or smoke or something? And I'd be like, Uncle Marty, I'm 11.
Ironically, a puppet version of him might be called a martinet.
That's pretty good, Butchie.
I was feeling a little proud of it. Thought of it earlier, but I held back for the right moment.
Good comic timing, Butch.
Yeah, that was a goodie.
Yeah.
So, you want to know why there are puppets?
Sure, I have an hour to hear a made-up puppet origin story.
It isn't made up, but it does coincidentally take place in the Caribbean, on an island called SMAP.
SMAP? Like the Japanese singing group?
I guess so.
I heard they broke up.
I know, but can you blame them? Who wants to be in a boy band at 40?
All right, listen. On an island called SMAP.
Wait a minute, I want to freshen my seltzer. All right, go ahead.
Hey, do I have time to change my underwear? I'm wearing pajamas as underwear and it's starting to bunch up.
Are you want to hear this story or not? All right, listen. One time, on an island called SMAP, there was a little boy, a lonely little boy, walking down the beach one day. And he saw something at the water's edge. And he ran to it, and he picked it up, and it was a fur little thing. And he put his hand in it, and it made its mouth move. It was a sort of toy, he thought. Look, it's like a little puppy or something. And he made it talk to him because he was lonely. He said, hello, lonely little boy. And he said, hello, pup, et puppet. That's what I'll call him, my new friend. And so he walked down the beach talking to Puppet. Puppet, this is the beach that you're from. Really, said Puppet. It's really nice, and it's nice to have a friend. And the boy would move his hand up in the puppet. Because this is a story, you can't see that, and I have to describe it in words. A lot of times, that's why the graphic novel is so important. Because a lot of times your imagination is worn out during the day. Because you're trying to imagine that this life and this civilization makes any sense. And so you go, oh, I'm having a hard time imagining things. Could you just show me some pictures sometimes? Sometimes words fail you. So the little boy had his hand up in this furry puppet, he's calling it. Now, it was the first time anybody called it puppet because this is the first puppet. This was a long time ago on this island. Islands have been around since, I think there's a specific date, but it's in the millions and all, almost billions, when there was a place called Pangaea. I don't know if you used to go there. Oh, my gosh, it's kind of an Italian-themed restaurant, but that American version of Italian dining, Pangaea. It was a large place, and they had palm trees and all sorts of things. It was so tropical That was a big theme. You know how we go through themes now on a small scale? Like, oh, the 50s, they liked old tiki thing, Hawaiian themes and everything. And actually, the turn of the century, they liked Hawaiian things. I think that's every 50 years or so, ukuleles and tiki culture comes in. But that used to happen on a global scale. And you'd say, oh, now what's in are saccades. Saccades are a wonderful combination of like palm, fern. We have them now. There's one sort of saccade left. It's called the sega palm. And Oliver Sacks wrote a great story about people who ate the sega palm and developed a debilitating neurological disorder that mimicked Parkinson's. Oh, the island of the puppet boy became the center of the earth. It was a sort of Pangea, except it was smaller. And so he was walking on the beach and he found his puppet and they had a conversation. And the sun started to go down as it was the end of the day. And so the boy and his new little friend walked back to his grandmother's house. And he said, Grandma, Grandma, look, I got a new friend. I call him Puppet. Hello, Grandma. I'm Lonely Little Boy. Lonely Little Boy didn't use his name. I don't want to use his name because I don't want anybody to know or to bother him. I know he's not really on this timeline, lives in another possible universe. Still, I value privacy so much. I said, I'm Lonely Little Boy's friend, Puppet. And the grandmother looked. And she looked at the little boy, and she looked at the puppet, and she looked at the boy, and she looked at the puppet, and she tried to disguise the feeling of horror that had taken over her. Because what the little boy had on his hand was some sort of carcass of some sort of animal that had washed up on the shore. Some furry thing, bigger than a vole. Couldn't tell what it was anymore because the water and the sun had taken its toll on it. You know what I'm saying? So perhaps it looked to the little boy like a furry sock with a face on it in which he could put his hand and make it a little friend. But in fact, it was the carcass of some animal. And the mother said, here, let me borrow your friend for a minute. He needs a rest. And she put him over there in town. She scrubbed the hand of the little boy for fear that there was some sort of bacteria or parasites on it. You don't know what's up in a carcass of a dead animal. That's why we wear them, our ancestors would first wear them on their head. Say, I'm going to gut this animal, and like this raccoon, and wear it on my head for a while till I can be sure there's no termites in it or whatever infest animals. And then I could use it as underwear. But I want it at eye level first so I can scope it out and make sure there's nothing bad in it. So she took that away and she said, oh, this little boy is so lonely, he's playing with the dead. And that's sad to me. So the grandmother thought for a while and she stroked the whiskers on her chin and she came up with an idea. And she said to the little boy, lonely little boy. She called him that, too. She probably is largely responsible for his condition if she's been doing. A lot of times parents, guardians will project a certain image on a child, and then they're nearly doomed because they say, oh, that's, we call him Big Head. So, oh, for years I thought I had a big head. And then it turns out you do, but still, it's hurtful. So there's a funny story, though, about a big-headed kid and a hat full of potatoes. And I guess we wouldn't have that if it wasn't for the big-headed. Bless us. Oh, we all have to be different, don't we? We all have to have different size heads for some reason. I don't know why, but it's fine. That's fine. Oh, for hat makers, so they can, that's how they get you. If it was one size fits all, I don't know that they would make as much money. So, oh, I can make a size 7.5, a size, it's all a scheme. So the grandmother says to the little boy, she says, I want you to go and run to a coconut palm tree. And I want you to get me coconut husk. And the little boy says, husk. And the grandma says, yes, get me a coconut husk. And the little boy says, coconut husk. Yes, coconut husk, coconut husk. You don't know what I'm talking about, do you? Said the grandmother. No, I think, I don't know, said the little boy. I think, do you mean the outside of the coconut? Like, no, the grandmother says, I think what I mean is like there's a, oh gosh, it looks like burlap. It's, is it? And the boy says, like, it's fibrous bark of the tree. up the top where the coconuts are. Yes, the grandmother says, yes, that stuff. What is that? Does that have a name? I don't know, says the boy. And they laugh about it for a long time. Go get me that. That burlappy looking fibrous husk stuff from a coconut palm. And also bring me a coconut. For a couple reasons. Because I'm going to use that too. Use it for what, Grandma? Are you making a sort of inedible pie that's so high in fiber that you get your, it would blow out your colon or something if you ate it? You know, no, not again. I'm not going to do that again, said the grandmother, implying that she had done it before. And so the little boy ran out to the coconut palm, and he's, oh, I'm so lonely. I should have brought my little friend. But he went and he got the coconut, and he shimmied up the coconut palm tree. And he didn't exactly shimmy up. What he had is those climbing spikes that linemen have so they can get up the creosote-soaked pine pole that holds the wires of our electricity. He had those. He had primitive versions of those on his feet. Why? Don't know. I guess because he shimmies up coconut palms a lot. Lives on an island. Perhaps coconut is the main part of their diet. I don't know. Would you get tired? Get tired of it after a while. And so, oh, Thai food or curry or whatever. What else are you going to make with the coconut milk? Oh, there's lots to be made. So, and then we'll sell the coconut water to people who feel like it's going to be good for their health or something. Put lime in it, drink it all up, said the charlatan. That'll do it. What kind of doctor did you call? Doctor in quotes. I called the doctor and he said, drink coconut water. Oh, you for sure know that he has an interest in that coconut water. That won't do anything. I said, call the doctor. He said, put the medicine in the mouth and swallow it on down, fool. My goodness, do what you're told. So the boy comes back with coconuts and he comes back with this coconut. We're going to call it husk. I don't know what it is. And the grandmother takes it into her primitive craft room. And she says, I'm going to make the little boy a friend. And she starts to construct another little boy out of the parts of coconut. For the eyes, she uses something that looks like eyes. For the arms, an arm look-alike. For the legs, some part of the tree that also looks like legs. And she fastened it together with some sort of fastener so that it could move in the fashion of a little boy. And it was very realistic, all made of coconut. And then she thought, you know what, I wish they had spray urethane. Now, it's too early for that. Is there something I can coat it with or anything? She thought for a long time. They thought, maybe something from bees, I'm thinking. The bees have some kind of wax or stain or something I can use. You know what? I'm just going to sleep on. This doesn't have to be done in a day. So she came out to the little boy. She says, listen, I'm working on something. I just ask you to stay away from your little friend Puppet for a while. Okay? So what I'm going to do with Puppet is I'm going to put him here in my workshop. So she put it in there into her workshop next to the puppet that she was working on. Well, little did she know that in the middle of the night, she didn't know this because in the middle of the night she had gone into the craft room, but it wasn't the craft room at all. It was her magic room, her den of black magic. We call it black magic, but it's not black. Now, black isn't bad. It's old black magic. Not black. I don't know why they call it black. Maybe because it's from black people or something, but it's not a pejorative. People have got, that's terrible. Never use anything like that as a, it's just, it happens to be that, they could call it blue magic. It might have been blue magic. Let's call it that. But it wasn't evil. It was just, it's how people who aren't familiar with an indigenous religion are condescending about their characterization of it. So everybody's a witch doctor or anything like that. She's clergy. All right? So she left it by all these magic charms and everything. You see where this is going. These two puppets left by an altar of magic charms. What could possibly go wrong? Is that right? And they leave them alone for the evening?
It's Pinocchio.
It's not exactly like Pinocchio, so just why don't you hear me out? Pinocchio is a golem. It's kind of, Pinocchio is sort of a golem story, okay? But I'll get to that. So, this is what happened. So, in the middle of the night, both of them
briefly came alive. And the little furry puppet carcass sat up for a minute. And he started to look around. And then the coconut boy sat up for a minute. And he started to look around. And they looked at each other. And they looked at themselves. And they screamed in horror and died from shock. The next morning, the grandmother came back in, and everything was just exactly how she had left it. She had no idea what had transpired during the night, that both of these things, these inanimate objects, had become animated, had become alive, and the shock of it, having just become alive out of nothing ex nihilo, with nothing a priori to ergo sum their incubus pluribus unum. I'm sorry, I'm speaking nonsense Latin, because I apologize for that. It's right here, I'm reading it. It's what it says, and it's embarrassing. I usually read the abridged version, but now I'm reading the unabridged. And really what it means is unedited. A lot of that, the author was a madman and put in all sorts of things that really needs to be taken out. It reads much better when it's taken out. There are some pages that just say blah, 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 and the author wanted it all in red and green ink, a la Faulkner. So that's an obscure reference. I don't think people are familiar with that. Anyway, so the next morning, the grandmother starts working on her puppet again. And she gets clothes for the little coconut boy puppet, and she takes the furry puppet, and she puts him on a shelf, and then she looks around and says, oh, I had no idea I was in the ritual room. I thought I was in the craft room. But she takes out the coconut boy, and she says, little lonely little boy, who is my grandson, I have something to show you. What is it, Grandma? Now you have a voice like that. What is it, Grandma? Well, I've made you a little friend. And she showed him the coconut boy. What is this? Said the boy. This is a new friend for you. It's a sort of puppet. Well, it's not a puppet because it's not a puppet that's little. That's what I call puppet. That's where I got it. Oh, well, anyway, it's a friend. I know you're lonely and you can do exactly what you did with the other. You can either put your hand up in him like you would any good friend or hang him by strings like you would any good friend, or stick rods in him, stick sticks in him and work him like that like you would any friend. And the little boy started thinking. He said, Grandma, is it really a friend? I mean, if I have to work him like that, I want somebody who loves me, you know, without having to be my voice, because I know what he's going to say, right? You know, eventually it becomes uninteresting, and I don't want to work his hands and legs. I'd prefer if he did that for himself. And the grandma thought for a while, and she says, well, there is something we could do. We could take him to the magician, and maybe the magician could turn him in to a real boy.
This is totally Pinocchio.
Hang on now, no. Because it's not a magician, it's like a cricket or something in Pinocchio. It's a different story. And there's lots of animated puppet stories. This predates Pinocchio. Lord.
So anyway, so they decide, okay, they're going to go to the magician's house. So they go to the magician's house. A magician lives in a crazy hut. Oh, they come upon this hut. It's made all sorts of scraps and old signs or something. One says, drink seltzer water. This sign is the front door. And he's got all sorts of crazy things that look like bones of different animals hanging from the front porch, and colored, and cans, like soda cans that are spray painted different colors and everything, and pieces of broken glass just scattered around. Oh, it's a crazy place. And they hear a little bit of drumming coming from inside, and the grandma goes to the door and she says, magician, you home? And the magician says, yes, I'm home. Come in. No, he didn't. I don't know how he talks. He says, yeah, I'm home. Come on in. And so they go in and say, he said, what you got there? So, well, we got a puppet boy made out of coconut. That looks good. I'll buy it off you. No, well, that's not what we're really here for. My little grandson is very lonely, I know. I've seen him walking on the beach alone with his hand up in a carcass. That's him. See, so I want a carcass. Don't worry, son. So we want to take this coconut boy and perhaps have him animated. You mean like do a cartoon of him? No. I mean brought to life, like turned into a... Oh! I knew that because I'm a magician. That's mainly what I do. All right. Well, we were interested in having that done. Oh, okay. I'll do that for you. That's really simple. But for payment, I know you don't have a lot. This is what I was thinking the arrangement could be. I will bring your puppet to life. I'm calling it puppet because I've sensed that that's... Is that a word someone's thinking? I was thinking of that word. All right. I will bring it to life for you. All right. Under one condition. And it's Rumpelstiltskin-esque. It's a Rumpelstiltskin clause. I remain somehow some kind of guardianship or... You know what I'm saying? It's like I'm donating my something. Reproductive, rah-rah. And so I want something written in there that I also have rights over the child, coconut child. What are we calling him? Coconut boy? Coconut child? Well, he has ambiguous genitalia because it's coconut. So I don't know what we're calling him. We could use they for the pronoun, but I don't know what you're calling boy. Why do we have to assign a gender, especially because he's made of coconut fiber? That's a good point, said the magician. Let's just call him Coconut Person. Coconut Dirt. Let's call him Coconut Boy, said the little boy. I don't mind. Let's just do that. He wouldn't mind. Just it doesn't matter. It sounds better. All right, Coconut Boy it is. So the magician took Coconut Boy into the back room, opened a beer, and sat there for a few minutes. And then he turned to the puppet and he said this. Oh, puppet. It's like that three times. And nothing happened. And then he said, if a spirit is in this room, if a soul of an ancestor or something around here is in this room, I'm going to let you have a second chance at life. I've got this perfectly good body right here. Especially, baby, if you were a child and you didn't get to finish out your life. Oh, ghost of dead child, why don't you come and climb inside this puppet? And it can be your shell for a while, and you can live out your life here on this beautiful island. And they tried it again. Oh, puppet. Oh, puppet. Oh, puppet. Yes, said the puppet. Holy crap. Said the magician. Oh, crap. Oh, I didn't think it'd work. Oh, I was just going to come out there and pretend. Oh, man. What's wrong? Said the puppet. Nothing. Hi. How are you? I'm fine. You have given me life. Yes, said the very, very nervous magician. I have. This is terrifying. I didn't expect to do that. I feel like I'm outside of my purview here. Let me introduce you to your new family. And he rushed the puppet out into the living room and he said, hey, here's your animated friend. Goodbye. And so the three of them walked out the door, astounded. Hello, said the little boy to the coconut boy. Hello, said coconut boy. Do I have a name? Well, we're calling you coconut boy. The grandmother stood there, her mouth open, so far open that a bunch of things had blown in it. And she had started to choke on some sort of hard-shelled bug or beetle or something. And she coughed the beetle out. You're alive. I am alive, said the boy. And it's very strange. I feel as if one minute I was another person. And now I have no real memories of what's happened before, but I remember certain things, like how to talk. I remember that there are other people or... I live somewhere or something. I'm so sorry. I'm confused. I'm very new here. Come with us, Coconut Boy. And they took him back to their house. That night, they sat around at the table. And the grandmother said this. You know, I think I've been thinking, and I'm really glad to see you, and I'm glad that my grandson now has someone to play with. Thank you, said Coconut Boy. Thank you. Thank you. However, here's my concern. We have somehow made, I don't know if it was an existing soul or something, we have made you, and now we have this strange relationship to you. Yes? Well, I mean, do we own you, or are you here, are you here against your will? It's not clear. It seems like an ethical dilemma, having given this life and everything. Creation of a life seems like a huge thing. And the reason we made you is because he was lonely. Now, he wanted some guarantee of love. He wanted something to love him unconditionally. So we made him a sort of slave, a sort of golem. I don't exactly follow you, said the Coconut Boy, because I'm so new. But let me just repeat what I think you're saying. You're saying you're concerned that perhaps you're somehow manipulating me or something. Yes, said the grandmother. That I'm somehow enslaved to you because you're pulling my strings, or you're the puppet master. And now it's not clear whether I'm self-aware. Yes, said the little boy. Yes, yes. Let me clear this up for you, said the puppet. Couple things. One is you're operating under the assumption that somehow there's free will. All right? So, said the puppet, said the coconut boy. I'm not so sure that you also are not puppets. That just because you can't see the subtle strings or the hand up your butt that's manipulating you, that you think you're not being manipulated. You know? So, I don't know. I think we're all, in a way, sort of puppets, aren't we? One. That's the first thing. The second thing is the whole notion of loneliness and everything, and the boy needing a companion. And that's how a lot of times we give. We get what we give. You know, I'm also going to receive love, am I not?
Well, yeah, yeah.
That's taken care of, right? You wouldn't abandon a baby just to give it its independence. So I think we're good. I think we can all live together, even though I'm a puppet, technically. More obviously a puppet, let's say.
That's a good point, said the grandma.
And you are subtle puppets.
Oh, okay. I can live with that.
And they started to live with that.
Oh, they ignored the fact that they were all so Frankensteins that they had made this puppet and he was going to have problems because being made a coconut, well, you know, I think there's probably going to be, there's some things that eat it. I know that there are some coconuts that get lethal yellowing.
What's that?
I think coconut palms. There's some palm trees that get lethal yellowing. I think coconut palms, perhaps royal palms, are susceptible to this palm scourge. So one day, the palm boy woke up and he looked in the mirror. Hardy White patented mirror. And he saw that he had become a little bit more yellow looking. And he said, "Lonely little boy, Grandma, come quick. There's something going on." And they immediately knew what had happened, that the palm tree that they had taken the coconut from had lethal yellowing, and they had passed it on to the puppet boy, to the coconut boy. Oh, there was sadness in the island house that day. Oh, when they realized what they had done. Was it their fault? Oh, they just wanted to make something. Oh, when we make a puppet, what do we do? What do we put in it? What have we made? The ancient stories of the golem. What's a golem? Well, I don't know if I've explained this before. There's in Jewish mythology, there's this notion of a golem, and I've talked about it, about making a clay man and everything. It's not literal. I was there. What it is, it's awful. It's basically manipulating a simpleton. All right, using your intellect to
manipulate a simpleton to do what you want. It's a very awful, evil thing. It's dark arts. All right? We can do, any smart person can do it to a person who's highly susceptible to, highly impressionable. All right? And we do it. We can make golems. We can change souls by trying to manipulate, by trying to be a puppeteer. Oh, are you a puppeteer? Are you a puppet? Are you a prop in a puppet show? What kind of puppet are you? Are you a shadow puppet? Oh, in Indonesia, they stand behind sheets with fire behind them. And they put these cutout puppets up against the sheet and they show the shadows. And the shadow puppets represent something. They represent the fact that perhaps we are three-dimensional shadows in a four-dimensional reality. Perhaps we are mere projections. And we can't see what's really happening behind the scenes, can we? Oh, when you close your eyes in a room, do the walls disappear? No, they're still there. Even if you're blind, doesn't mean that there's no walls. It just means that you have to use your other senses. Now, is sound the best way to navigate a room? Not necessarily. Touch is better, but you can use sound. You have to concentrate. Now, this is like seeing the subtle worlds of the puppeteer. You know, you don't have vision for it. You have to use some of your other subtle senses to see it. Oh, but you can in your imagination. Oh, the things that you can do in your mind, I'll make a list of them. I wish that for the human brain, they had the kind of rack of pamphlets that they have on the highway, on the turnpike, at the rest areas. You go in there, and there's a library of those little pamphlet things. And in Florida, when I drove down to Florida as a child, you drive down on the Florida turnpike, and you get, oh, look, there's a wax museum of all sorts of Indians. Oh, there's a wiki-washi where they do mermaids do things underwater, act out plays and everything underwater. There's a parrot jungle. There's a monkey jungle. There's a, all sorts of things like that. Oh, my goodness. I could go on and on. The kind of attractions. And you see what's possible when you have something like Florida, which is like your brain, which is just a swampy, gooey mess where there really are no laws. And you can go in there and you can really, your imagination and your evil inclinations are your only real fences. There are no fences. And I remember reading a essay by Wallace Stevens about early Florida when they had cattle ranchers that had no fences. And they would just, because they had so much land, there was no point to have fences. Didn't matter. So the cattle would just roam and they'd walk into houses and things like that. And the ranchers were so wealthy, they would leave bags of gold on the porches of their house because there was nobody around. There was nobody to take it. And when there is no one to steal your gold, or when there's no one to take your cows, there's no reason to have a fence or a lock or anything like that. Oh, your mind, there's nobody there. Your mind is an old Florida. Your brain is the Florida of fenceless cattle ranches. Nobody's going to pilfer your gold so you can stick it on the patio there. That is the one place that you can do that. Freedom in there. I know that a lot of times you have to say things outside. The puppet master's making you say things. I got no strings on me. That's the biggest lie. Making the puppet sing, there's no strings on me when there's strings on it. Ouch. Right? I'm truly free. Got a bunch of captives to sing. They go into prison, have everybody singing, I'm free as a bird now. Oh, break your heart. But that's what we do. That's what the puppets do. What if Punch and Judy are very, very, very gentle souls? And then every day they have to go out there three times a day on the streets of France and hit each other. Or one of them gets hit. Judy mainly gets, God, dang it, that's awful. They still show those Punch and Judy shows? man, I mean, somebody, they a concerned neighbor going to puppet going to show up with a firearm. Say, Punch, that's enough. That's enough. Swing that club once. I will use this. And then that's it. And then it's a Punch and Butchie or something.
Don't make me pull the trigger.
That's it, Butch. So anyway, yeah, what if they're gentle souls being made to do something? What if we are gentle puppets? And the strings that pull us. Oh, the things, there's some kind of hand up in me. I feel it sometimes, even working my mouth. I say things I'm supposed to say. I can't say other things. Fears I can't express in public. Because I'm now you say, oh, are you really manipulated, have no free will? I'm pretty sure I do. I just can't see the puppeteer. That's the problem. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I guess these things could be coming out of me, but sometimes they shock me, the things I say or the things that the disconnect between what I do and say and what I think. I think surely that must mean that there's somebody doing the talking for me. I always love seeing films of, let's say, Sesame Street. Children would like something like that. They did as adults. The adults that grew up, they look back and they go, man, that was twisted. That was great. That was that once I did take LSD, I realized that was exactly what it was like. And I didn't even have to take it. Could have just revisited my youth. And that would have been enough. What was I talking about? Puppets? I had a flashback to marionette pilot youth programs of my youth. But they were all populated with puppets. Now, I might be a little old for Sesame Street. Now, those puppets go to such an extreme, there's even a fella in one. Now, is that a puppet if you're up in the costume? Something? I'm actually inside the big bird. There's a fella in there. His hand is up in the beak. And then one hand is a wing. And the other hand is, that's why I say, oh, Big Bird's had a stroke. That's why his left wing is kind of tucked in there. But that's the excuse. But the bird, he's fine. The person's fine. He is elderly, which is strange. I don't know how long you get. Oh, God. My left arm hurts so bad. He's got to say at some point after 40 years or something, 50 years. How long has it been on the air? 40 years or something? Oh, my gosh. Maybe longer than that. But even before that, they were puppets. Kukla, Fran, and Ollie were all puppets. So one of them wasn't. I'm not going to tell you which one. We, to this day, don't know which one. Captain Kangaroo had puppets, had Mr. Moose and Bunny Rabbit. Now, they weren't very sophisticated puppets, but it didn't matter. Mr. Moose didn't even have any hands or limbs or anything. I think he's just a head. And which is crazy. I think, is he an animated moose or is he an animated hunting trophy? Like at Disney World, they have those. They have the animated trophies on the wall. The decapitated heads of our forest friends are going to talk to us. Let's sing a country song. I had my head cut off by a country man. That's when they sing this song. It's kind of grotesque. And I think a lot of that in the automatops at Disney World, all the robots and everything. Robots and puppets are sort of a grotesque concept. They're sort of animated corpses. We're trying to make this creature do our bidding. You know? We want slaves. And I remember that as even as a child. That human inclination to want to control other beings and everything. And have minions or whatever. I would do it with my little stuffed animals and everything. Now, I was benevolent. That's the thing. You see, as a child, so I'm a benevolent dictator. I'm a benevolent puppeteer. I love my puppets. I'm the king. I'm the queen puppet. Hello, children. Everything like that. And there's a slightly menacing thing about it. That's why when we see puppets on shows that have some sort of religious, political agenda, we cringe, right? Because we realize the power of the puppet and what they're making it do. And it's almost, you almost feel like, oh gosh, this is violating the puppet's rights. There's a puppet museum in Atlanta, Museum of Puppetry Arts. And it's a wonderful, I go there. I have no interest in it. I'm just saying I love museums and it's a good one. And you can see some famous puppets. And Madam is there, Wayland Flowers. Madam, who's a ventriloquist rod puppet, all right, which is interesting, and very famous. Now, you can see her. They're just laying there. Now, Waylon's dead, you see? So was Waylon Madam? Is Madam still there? And you look at Madam and you say, well, Madam was animated again? And you see that with the other puppets. Where's the life? And you see that when you look at the dead, too. If you ever lost anybody, they lay there, they're there, and they're not there. And you go, what was it that was bringing them to life? Was it something inside them? Was it inside the puppet? Was it outside the puppet? We don't know. Oh, why do we think about these things?
I think for entertainment, but also to inform our ethics, right? A little bit. So, yes, that's what we do. We do it to entertain ourselves. We realize that we can't get anywhere contemplating that, but we can use it a bit to help ourselves maybe eliminate a little of the suffering in our lives by becoming a little more aware of what possibly is going on in this wonderful puppet stage that we call life.
Hi, I'm Hardy White. You have been listening to the Puppet Marathon. We're trying to raise awareness for puppets, for their rights. A lot of them say, the slogan is, take your hand out of me. Or something like that. Let go of them. Don't drop me. Don't drop the strings, though. That's the problem. So you lose the puppeteer. It's a symbiotic relationship. It's like a shark and a remora or something. I don't know. Maybe different than that. I'm trying to think of a crazier master blaster. Does that exist in reality? But like a symbiotic relationship like that, where there one of them really needs the other. They can't really survive without the other. Oh, my word, I feel like that with you, my friends. I feel like it's slightly more parasitic that I live on you like a benevolent tick. And I don't give you Lyme disease. I give you lion disease.
Thank you.
Oh, friends, though, I take it very seriously. Oh, this life, I realize how short it is and how agonizing it can be. I also realize how joyful it can be. Oh, my goodness, all the emotions and all the feelings that it encompasses, all the things that we go through. That's why I talk about the puppets. That's why I give you the stories of the Lonely Island Boy. Well, whatever happens to the Coconut Boy and everything, they just go on, they hang out. He dies of the lethal yellowing. What about the furry little hand puppet? It never comes back to life again. It just lays there, which is good. I think the moral of that story is it's okay to build a puppet, but don't try to animate the dead. Don't put your efforts there. I don't think. Try to make something original, I guess. It's so beautiful, though. Well, puppet really comes from the word doll, you know? So I guess we had dolls first, and then we started moving them around in creepy ways. And make the doll walk! You know what I'm saying? So we all like to make figures of ourselves, make some image of ourselves, and it must, I'm not saying there's a creator or anything like that, but it must reflect some other greater truth. We must be projecting something that we think is happening to us, that we are some sort of doll, some sort of crude impression of some greater thing. I don't know. I really don't know. And I only concern myself with it for entertainment purposes, because if I let something I don't know rule my life, that's just strange. So I think I just go on the basic level, content myself with being an idiot, and try to do all the idiot things correctly, while at the same time using my brain as a sort of time machine and going anywhere I want, and you can't tell me I can't. And I will try it as long as I have it. Now, my brain is not perfect, and it breaks down, and I've seen it break down in others. Oh, my goodness. So you have to use it while you have it. Here's something I've learned about art as I've gotten old. When I was young and I made art, I was attached to it. You know?
And I thought, oh, this painting I've made is precious. I can't let anything happen to it, or I need to sell it, or I get keep it, or something like that. Everything I made was precious. Then I had some experience where I had art stolen from me. And I had to come to terms with the fact that what was precious was not that, but my ability to make it. And I still had that. That the thing I made was impermanent, but that I was permanent and can continue to be the source of it.
Well, as I got older, I realized that, guess what else was impermanent? My ability to make it. And all artists sort of learn that. That you can actually, your skill can diminish, your ideas can diminish as you diminish. Oh, and it's beautiful the way we fade away from this world, but that also fades. So when we do make something, all these moments, it's almost like they don't belong to us. We almost can't claim our own accomplishments because we're just not the person we are or were or ever are when we are were. Are you still listening? Hello? That's the thing. If it was a live group and everybody was gone, I could stop. Say, oh, I'm going to quit early, I think. But if everybody is, I'll never know if everybody's tuned out. I wonder if that's ever happened, where every single person is tuned out. So I don't think he's saying anything. No, he really is. But that can't be. I'll tell you why it can't be that every single person is tuned out. Because there are radio frequencies, shortwave frequencies, and one in particular I'm thinking that used to just list numbers in Spanish. Is that, you know that one? And people would listen to it for hours. All right? So therefore, I know that there are people listening to me. But I don't know why. They might be crazy. Or they might hear me and they say, I recognize another crazy person. It's like you're on a train and you're from Romania. And you hear somebody, you know, a couple, you know, seats down, goes, hey, race a plesh, dar, numa, numa, yeah, or something. I don't speak Romania. Something like that. I think that was Dragus Dondinte. Oh, you're Romanian. No, sorry. I was just singing Numa song. But so you recognize that, though, don't you? You recognize I hear my native tongue, and perhaps madmen also do that. I recognize another madman. So I'll listen to, not madman like the TV show. They've ruined everything. Language ruins itself, doesn't it? Oh my gosh. You can't, they make it, language is like these computer companies that make their stuff to be obsolete. So we do the same thing so that generations can't communicate with one another. So we make the language obsolete, planned obsolescence, so that there will be turmoil, there will be conflict between generations. And I don't know why this is, why we do this, you know, but we do. And so we sometimes don't understand one another because I might use a word differently or an expression differently, or I might just have a different idea. I'm sure my whole worldview is different because of when I was born. And the world I saw, and then I time travel, and that makes things very confusing for me. Do you understand? Somebody has a bad idea. You know, I mean, you'd love somebody, and then they believe something that's abhorrent, right? So I've gone back in time, and I've been hanging out with people, and they go, oh, you're so wonderful. Then you hear their abhorrent political or religious views or something, and you don't know what to do. Do I base it on that? How do I come to terms with this? And you can do this. This is a time traveler's problem. I've had this of liking people that are unlikable. Or having go back meeting heroes that are despicable. It works both ways. And it gets very confusing. You know? How nice people can be evil. And how evil people can be nice. And oh, it's very, I don't know what to do with all that information. I just go around. I guess I just look at the world very, I just try to pay attention. Keep my wits about me. They say that when you're in a strange situation. They say, if you're going to, I know I've been to hell a couple of times. They go, okay, if you're going to take public transportation in hell, there's a lot of evildoers there. So just keep your wits about you. A lot of people there for stuff that's victimless.
So don't worry about it. But still, keep your wits about you. Public transportation in hell. And so I'm used to doing that. Like, just paying attention and thinking and just imagining, who am I going to hit with my backpack if I have to make a break for it or something like that. I've never gotten into a fight in a restaurant. But every time I go to a restaurant and I sit down, I still sort of try to evaluate how I would get out of there if there was some sort of ruckus. It's like, I've hit this guy with the, he looks big. I'm going to hit him with a chair to give myself some time. Is that paranoid? No, I think it's like gun smoke or something. I think what happens is that a lot of things that I watched as a child on TV, I have confused with personal experience. And so now I think, you know, like I feel like I'm a spy or a gunslinger, or I feel like I'm you know what I'm saying? Or a detective. I feel like I'm a detective a lot, because TV, all the things that Newton Minow listed, you know, about why TV is awful, that's all the things I imagine myself to be. And it did, it influenced me, and it continues to influence all the images that we see. Isn't it beautiful? And we do it so wonderfully recklessly. I love how we don't pay attention to it at all. Let's teach this child crazy things and see what happens. Yes. Oh, my goodness. Sometimes evil happens. And what do? I don't bond together. All I can do is give you a hug, open myself up, and say, I don't know, man. I'm certainly not one of the, I promise you, I'm not one of the nasty ones. I don't think. I might be, secretly. I hope I'm not at night, you know. I hope I don't have some kind of werewolf thing where I think I'm a decent person, Jekyll and Hyde. I'm not experimenting with anything to make myself bolder. A lot of people do that, say, oh, I'm going to take human growth hormone or something. Who knows what will happen? Oh, I don't want to be your puppet master. I don't want to be your puppet friend. On the other hand, but I'll be on this hand. So please, if I'm going to be your puppet, that'll be your strong hand. Because when you try to make the mouth move with your left hand, it's all out of sync. I look like dubbed in puppet. Oh, I just can't believe that I have real friends. I'm surrounded by so many artificial ones, and I don't know why I make them and like to perform them. I guess because actors are so difficult, too. Bless their hearts. But as long as I have two hands, I have at least two actors that are that can be in my play. So that's another consideration. And these guys that do stop motion with the clay, forget about it. They can have a whole world. They don't need it. I don't need anybody to come over. I can do this by myself. That's all, when you see an artist who works alone, like I recorded all the parts myself. You always, the next question should be, you don't have any friends, do you? Because we have fun to make music together. Why would you want to do it alone unless you're hard to work with? Well, because it seems like a group activity. In some religions, you can't even do certain things unless you have a minion, which would Jewish. I guess that's why the minion. You know what I'm saying, though. Because it's not a solitary act. It's not a solitary act. It has no meaning unless there's other people involved. You know? And we have so many things like that. But I think we've sometimes I confuse that. You know, and forget about the activities that we need as human beings that require other physical presence of other human beings who are wishing and hoping for the same things. That we can sync our imaginations. That's what it's about. It's synchronizing our imaginations to make things great. And when we do that, that's when the great moments arise. And all the things that we cherish, that we think are beautiful and great, come from those moments of people syncing their imaginations like that. They don't come from solitary individuals. No, no, no. They come from Power Ranger. Concept in biology. Is that a thing? I don't know. We need all the Power Rangers to come together to make the big thing. You know what I'm saying? But there will always be the Green Ranger or whatever. There will always be somebody who's the most popular at the cons And you know who that is. Tommy Frank, what's his name? Oh my goodness, the lines he gets. People come to see him. Favorite Ranger. If you are interested in puppetry, here's what you should do. Hi, welcome to the Hardy White Miracle Nutrition craft section of the show. In this section of the show, I will talk you through a craft project, and all you have to do is go get the items that I suggest. Now, this is a little difficult to do live, so you might have to. So go get a styrofoam ball now. I will wait. You're getting a styrofoam ball. By now, you should have a styrofoam ball. Now, go get a pack of pipe cleaners. Oh, I'll just list all the things. So get pipe cleaners, glue, paper, get cow hearts. Now, this is optional. Get anything you can wad up. Get some old forks. Do you have a spoon? Do you have one of those spoon display racks when you get this, buy the spoons on vacation, and then you put them on the wooden display rack like that, and they have a little say, oh, World's Fair 1964. Get that. All right. Flip it over. Draw a face on it. Puppet. That's it. You're done. All right. Why did I get the styrofoam ball? I don't know, man. Stick it up. I know it. Go get a turtleneck. And then stick in the turtleneck and say, look, go to your friends and go, look, I got this huge goiter. Like that. That's fun. That's why I mainly told you to get it. Now, pipe cleaners are because, man, I've been looking at your pipes here. Nah, you got to clean them. I know that smoking is a terrible habit, but at least keep your poisonators clean. That's what I say. And you can make little stick figures out of those, too. Idea, craft idea. I get them all the time. Come to me in my sleep. Wake up. Get the glue gun. That's a lot of times what I think. A lot of people keep a gun under their mattress. I keep a glue gun just in case. Who knows? And some glitter. The glitter's for self-defense because if somebody breaks in, I'm like, I'll pretend that I have a spell. I go, magic spell is not about us, like that, and I'll put the glitter at them. And because of they're so impressionable because of the Harry Potter movies, they'll go, magic. Also, then the glitter sticks to them, and it makes it easy for the police to identify them when they get arrested. Oh, if you listen to Hardy White's Miracle Nutrition, the ideas that you will get. Oh, your life will be transformed, I guarantee it. You're going to leave a different person than when you came in. I know that. That's just, everybody knows that, though. That's just Heraclitus or something. You can't step in the same stream twice unless you freeze time. Then you can step in it to your heart's content and nothing will have happened. Change, change, change. Something I will never have that I wanted as a child. I thought, I want a job that has one of those things that you wear on your belt that's got pennies, nickels, dimes, quarters, and you go cha-conk, cha-conk, cha-kink, cha-conk, 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 and you push out the different change. Never have that. People don't use it anymore. It's a fact. Oh, my friends, thank you so much for listening today, for being here, to letting me be a puppet to my heart's content. And I thank you so much for our regular visits on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, and online at WFMU.org. Thank you so much for listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White, and I will see you again, God willing, next week.
National Juniors of Columbia, South Carolina on the Derek label, A Home in Zion, 1957. Here on Center's Crossroads on WFMU, and we always play a couple more songs before we go to our first break every week, but this week we're a little special, just a little more talking, because we have a little more great gospel records, because we're joined once again after a too long hiatus with Brother Jason Rosenberg from Skokie, Illinois, that is joining us again, a guest DJ, and he has brought a hand-picked selection of some momentous gospel music. So you're in for a treat this week, the rest of this week, and next week as well. Jason Rosenberg has stopped by to play us some momentous gospel music. And welcome once again to our virtual studio, Jason.
Hi, Kevin, and hello, Sinner's Crossroads listeners. It's an honor to be here again. It's been a few years.
Yeah, it's been too long. We'll make amends there, but we're always delighted to have you and also to chat with all things gospel and baseball with you. Tell us about the record there, an amazing record.
Wow, that's one of those family of labels that were just incredible, intense and really beautiful male quartet stuff. That's the Derek label, like you said, 1957, National Juniors. If you look at the label, I think it says the lead is by a guy named Little Melvin, and the background bass is quite tense as well. Just tremendous style. I've only seen one copy, and when I saw it, I looked at the Black Gospel discography by Lawton and Hayes, and saw that it wasn't in there, and saw that the imprint was of the family of labels. It looked like, what was it, Bowman, Derek, and one other that escapes me right now, Beverly, right? That group of labels from the Carolinas. This one, yeah, 57. It's a Southern Plastics imprint, so you can trace that's how I was able to trace the date on it. It is 1957. Golden age of gospel, for sure. That one hasn't been reissued yet, though. Maybe it'll be on one of my next volumes.
Yeah. I can't believe there is someone listening to Sinner's Crossroads that hasn't gone to raregospel.com and perused all the releases, photographs, and ephemera there. And you suggested, why don't you introduce the Golden Voices, second record here.
Well, the Golden Voices, that's on the Bowman.
58, yes.
Yeah, we'll go on. Yeah. Golden Voices, that's on the Bowman label, 1958. As long as I've been doing this, that's the only copy I've heard of. If it wasn't, at the time I bought it, it was not in the gospel discography, so again, enjoy it. Going up.
Lord, every time
I try to do my best,
that's the time
I have to stand my test.
Give it up. Oh, yes, I am.
Lord, I'm the wrong.
I'm trying
to make it to heavenly heart.
I got the ticket.
Got
it in my hand.
I'm headed for the promised land.
Going up. Do you believe?
Way up
to my home.
To my home on high.
That's the time
I have to stand my test.
Give it up. Oh, Lord.
All of the wrong.
Trying to
make it to my heavenly home.
I got my ticket.
Got my ticket.
In my hand. And I'm headed.
Oh, Lord.
I'm going up.
Going up.
Do you believe?
Way up
to my home.
To my home on high.
That's the time
I have to stand my test.
I'll give it up. Oh, yes, I am.
On the road.
Trying
to make it to my heavenly home.
I got my ticket. I got it in my hand. And I'm headed
for the promised land.
I'm going up.
Way up.
I'm going up.
Well,
Lord, I got a mother up there, and I got a father up there. I got loved ones. Oh, yes, I have. I got loved ones. Going on. Promise to meet them. A long time ago. Sometime I better get heaven. Makes me bow down.